and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. This episode is brought to you by HarperCollins Australia. Today, listeners, I have the absolute pleasure of introducing you to another fabulous Aussie author making a splash on the local literary scene with her sparkling feel-good stories. Michelle Upton is a Brisbane-based author whose first novel, Terms of Inheritance, was shortlisted for the Banjo Prize in 2021. A little over 12 months later, Terms of Inheritance was published by HarperCollins Australia. And I can see why. With a unique hook and cast of strong, vibrant female characters, this was one heck of a good story. Hard to believe it was Michelle's debut, frankly. Another 12 months on, and Michelle's second book, Emergency Exit Only, is about to be published. Now, when I first picked up Emergency Exit Only, I wondered if it would live up to the spectacular arrival of Michelle's debut. And after reading it and loving it, I can put my hand on my heart and honestly say it exceeded my expectations. A wonderful feel-good story about second chances and opening yourself up to possibilities. So I'm thrilled to welcome Michelle to the podcast today. Hi, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Claudine, for having me. I'm so excited to hear that you enjoyed it.
Michelle, as we speak, we're about 2 days away from official publication day. And I wondered, how are you feeling?
Feeling all the feels. I'm feeling nervous, but super excited. And I've had some feedback from some bookstagrammers and people who got hands on the advanced reader copies. And they've just been messaging me and it's, oh my gosh, my heart just feels like it's going to burst out of my chest because it's just been really well received. And I just feel so lucky and blessed that I get to go through all this experience again. And that's all you want is when you put your work out there, it's for people to enjoy it and to be able to relate to the characters. And people seem to be doing that. So I'm feeling really happy about that.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, if listeners are wondering, you obviously are not a native Australian. You've got
a Brummie accent, yeah, from Birmingham. So we've been in Australia now for 17 years, so my accent is not going to. So can you imagine how strong my accent was when I arrived? And then every time I kind of go back or I end up talking to my mom, I can just hear myself kind of getting thicker and thicker in the Birmingham accent. So everywhere I go, it's kind of like, oh, you know, where are you from? You're from the UK. And like the accent always gets picked up, but it's not going anywhere.
But your books are very firmly planted in Australia.
Yes. Yes, they are. Yeah. They're set right here in the Redlands Coast, which is where I live, and on the Gold Coast as well, in Queensland. You know, when I was thinking about where do I want to set these books. I say, write what you know. And my husband and I, we've been living here for 17 years and I'm just in love with, you know, the beauty that I'm surrounded by. And, you know, coming from the UK, I often say to myself, oh, you know, we used to have to save up for 5 years to come and be somewhere like this and get to travel and see all the beautiful beaches and that kind of thing. And I think when you don't grow up with it, it's a whole new appreciation. I'm always pinching myself that I live in Australia. It's just such a blessing. And so I really wanted to celebrate the Redlands Coast where I live, and you know, we're always popping down to the Gold Coast, so that felt very natural. And in terms of inheritance, you know, it's about a multimillionaire who's the owner of a casino and a hotel empire, and that just seemed fitting for her character for that to be set on the Gold Coast. And there are some scenes in Emergency Exit Only set on the Gold Coast, which I can't really talk about because it will give the plot away a bit. So I just really love writing about these beautiful places that are right on my doorstep.
Yeah, fantastic. I so love it. Now, I wondered, Michelle, if when you entered your manuscript into the Banjo Prize back in 2021, that you could have imagined where you might be only a couple of years later.
Oh, my word. The journey that I've been on the last couple of years has literally been a dream come true. It really has. I spent about 6 years, before I wrote Terms of Inheritance, I spent about 6 years writing that novel and it didn't get picked up by a publisher. And so when I was thinking, oh, shall I go again and write another book? Well, it was obvious that the answer was going to be yes, I'm going to go for it because I love writing. But there's so you pour so much into it, so many hours, and you know I've got kids and all the rest of it. So when I made that commitment, I was going to go for it again, and I started writing Terms of Inheritance at the end of 2019. But it was great because when I was writing the first novel that didn't get picked up anywhere, I was taken on board. I was learning the craft of writing. You know, I read a lot, but I didn't know if I could write a book. And so I'm learning the craft and reading all the craft books and listening to the podcast and doing the courses and all those kind of things over the period of 6 years. But then I'm trying to like massage what I've got into how it should be. But it didn't get picked up. But then with Terms of Inheritance, I was able to put everything that I'd learned into something completely fresh. And I was so pleased with the way it turned out. And I started writing that end of 2019. And then COVID hit in 2020, so I didn't touch it for about 6 months. And then I was desperate for some escapism, so I picked it up again at the end of 2020 and rewrote the second draft, and that took me to 84,000 words. And then by the beginning of 2021, I felt like I had something that was worth putting out. And so I was putting it out to literary agents, and I saw that the Banjo Prize was open for entries. And so I entered it into that competition, and while I was, you know, and you kind of have everything crossed and hope for the best, but then the winners aren't announced for months. So I was putting it out to literary agents, and I remember getting the phone call. I was out on a run and I was chatting to my mom, and I'd been getting some rejections back or not hearing anything back from, you know, literary agents, as you do when you're a writer, you're just getting them all the time. But I was on this day, I was feeling particularly, oh, okay, this I've been here before with the last book, and this is going, you know, are we going to go down this path? Is it going to get picked up? And because you never get any feedback, you start questioning yourself, oh, is it that maybe the dialogue, is it the story? But you can't really change anything because you don't have any feedback. And I was chatting to my mom and kind of feeling a bit gutted. And she was, you know, as she always does, kind of saying, you know, keep going, you've got it, you know, you can do this. And then I got a phone call while I was speaking to her, and I said, oh, I'll phone you back in a minute. And I was getting ready to say, oh, you know, thanks for phoning, but I'm not interested, expecting a spam caller. And it was Roberta Ivers from HarperCollins, and she said, oh, hi, Michelle, I just want to let you know that you've been shortlisted for the Banjo Prize. And oh my word, it was just like in an instant, everything changed. And all I thought was, oh, that's fantastic, because now I've got something to put in my bio. So I phoned my mom back, and I was really excited with her. And then I sprinted home to my husband. And by the time I got back, I was just in floods of tears. And I was going, I said, guess who got shortlisted for the Banjo Prize? It's me. And then a couple of weeks later, I had the phone call saying, oh, you know, we loved it so much, and we want to publish it. And oh, I just was overwhelmed, because 8 years that you put in before, you keep going and you keep going, and you're writing and you're putting it out there, and you don't know if you're going to get anywhere, but you hope that you are. And all I felt was, after all the excitement and the crying and the laughing and the jumping for joy, it all calmed down. I thought to myself, I was right to carry on. I was right to keep going. You know, that voice that was in the back of your mind saying, don't give up, don't give up. And so I was just so relieved, and then just so incredibly grateful with HarperCollins for them to give me this fantastic opportunity. So incredibly grateful.
I love that story. I've spoken to a few Banjo Prize winners now, and now you as a shortlisted Banjo Prize winner. And without exception, it has been just a wonderful story of not only tenacity and determination, but also just heartfelt gratitude for the opportunity. I was going to ask you if it was trite to say that it changed your life, but I'm hearing
it has. Absolutely. You know, I was working part-time before, and now I've kind of stopped that to do all the writing, and it's just given me so many amazing opportunities. The amount of people that I have met, like authors, writers, book lovers, librarians, bookstore owners, I wouldn't have met all those people if it hadn't have been for this opportunity. And then having a second book coming out and being given the opportunity again is just mind-blowing and super exciting. And this is like, okay, this is where for years and years you're showing up, you're showing up, you're showing up, and then you get this opportunity and you keep doing it, you keep showing up every day at the laptop and kind of going, okay, I'm putting my best into it. But it's just everything that you've learned in the past and just bringing it for you. You're always learning as an author all the time about the craft and how to deal with things. And yeah, it really is just a dream come true. So yeah, for sure.
Michelle, as I may have mentioned, or certainly people who follow me on Instagram would know, that I was super lucky to receive an advanced reading copy of Emergency Exit Only. And I absolutely fell in love with Amelia Harris and her conservative life plan. And watching her life unravel and following her journey as she tries to piece it back together again was a thoroughly enjoyable roller coaster ride.
Oh, good.
But for the benefit of listeners who've yet to discover this gorgeous book, can you tell me more about Amelia and her story?
Emergency Exit Only is about 35-year-old Amelia Harris, who is in an accident and comes to realise how short life is. And when she's pushed to her limits at work, she dramatically quits her mundane job. But rather than going and getting another job somewhere else, doing the same thing that she's done for the last 10 years, she decides to go and search for a job that ignites a passion within her. And so she spends the next few months testing out all the jobs that she's ever dreamed of doing, like being a wedding planner, zookeeper, florist, teacher, writer, and lots of other things. And of course, throwing some big family drama and a big romance, and we're in for a good time. But ultimately, the novel is about what happens when you consistently step out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. The premise is just fantastic. But Michelle, I'm really intrigued to know where the genesis of this story came from.
Yeah, so I'd finished writing Terms of Inheritance and all the edits were in, and so I was thinking, what's next? And so I literally came to, like, sat down, had a great big blank piece of A3 paper, a big pad in front of me, and like my permanent markers, and so I was like, I'm just going to brainstorm some ideas. And I went right back to the basic question of why do we read, and the answer was that came to me was, oh, we read to escape. And so, well, what are we trying to escape? Oh, you know, maybe we're trying to escape our daily routines, our lives, you know, that kind of thing. And then I had this strong image of a woman sitting at her desk at work and all of her colleagues at work, and they're overlooking, all of their desks overlook a big windows with a beautiful park, and they can see the trees, and, you know, occasionally there's koalas in there, but her desk looks directly at an emergency exit only door. And as soon as I had that image in my mind, I was like, yes, I know where this is going to go. I know how we're starting this book. And then she also has an accident and she has this big wake-up call. And that really came from my own experience of having a wake-up call when I was, I'm 44 and I was 29. When my son was 10 months old, my dad died of, he passed away, he had cancer. And it was such a shock. And it was such a big wake-up call for me. And, you know, we go through our lives and everyone says, life is short. But then when you're directly affected by that, and, you know, my dad was 59. After that happened, you know, I was having all these big questions come to me. So why are we here? What's our purpose? And one of the questions that kept coming up to me was, okay, if you could do anything with your life, what is it you really, really want to do? Don't put any limitations on yourself. What is it you really want to do? And I was a primary school teacher at the time and I was on maternity leave. But the answer that kept coming back to me was to write. I want to write. And so I decided to follow that feeling inside of me that was going, you know, this is something that you want to do. It was like that spark of something inside of me. And so I, you know, and then it's like in The Alchemist, like they talk about seeing signs and things like that. And a few weeks later, I had a text message from one of the mums at playgroup, and she was saying, I'm putting together a writer's group, does anybody want to join? And I hadn't written anything since, you know, university or whatever. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna give it a go. And so I just put it out there and said, I'm going to join. And then that's where it all started, my journey. And so in Amelia's case, her kind of putting herself out there and trying to find something that ignites a passion within her, that's where I think all of that came from, was from having that experience myself. And I never went back to being a full-time teacher. I kind of worked for an event stylist company, and I went back as a teacher aide because my focus was to write, and I wanted to spend as much time, preserve as much time as I could for learning the craft and putting, you know, it takes hours and hours of, you know, writing, and I wanted to put in my 10,000 hours. And so that's what I did. So, you know, for me, that wake up call and that, you know, the passing of my dad, it changed the trajectory of my life. But looking back now, I can see that what my dad left me, though, all those questions, it was a gift. I'd do anything to just, you know, have another hug and tell him I love him again. But that's how I feel about it. This was the gift that he left me, and I feel really grateful for that.
I love that story, Michelle. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. I think that more and more these days, people are open to the idea of following their dreams. And mm-hmm. you see lots of examples of career changes later in life. I'm an example of that. people who've opted for the safer career choice early on in their life, only to do an about face later in an effort to live a more authentic life.
For sure.
I've always thought it was so hard for people to decide on the course of their entire lives at the age of 17 or 18.
Yeah.
Is that something that you were especially concerned to address or to explore in this book?
I think it was just more that idea that it's never too late, you know, and there's so many opportunities nowadays. I think when I was at school, it was a case of, oh, pick what you want and that's it, you're going to stick with it. But we don't really live in that world anymore. Yeah. You know, you can go to university as a mature student, you can kind of do anything you want. But I think really it came from that place of life is short. You know, I want to get to the end. I don't want to have any regrets. I don't want to look back and go, oh, if only I'd chased that dream. And sometimes I think it's not even about, not everyone has a specific passion. Like for Amelia, she doesn't know what her passion is, and she's searching for that. She wants to have, like a mother has passions, and even though they're fleeting, she says, oh, you know, maybe I could have something like that. And her aunt has a passion as like a fashion designer, you know, but she's in search for, well, maybe I could find that. And really in the book, it's about getting curious and just opening yourself up to different experiences and seeing where that leads you. And, you know, through the jobs that she tries, some of them she enjoys, some parts she doesn't enjoy. And it's all about kind of finding out what works for her and what lights her up inside. And it doesn't always work out how she thinks it's going to be. But sometimes it's that idea that, oh, mate, you know, if I was that, the grass is greener on the other side. But when you actually come to try it, you go, oh, no, that wasn't the case. But what's fun is that for Amelia, she tested out. And then if it doesn't work out, all she knows then, she's not going to get to the end and go, oh, if only. But, you know, she actually gives it a go and then realizes in some areas, oh, no, that wasn't for me anyway. And then you can kind of let go of that. And there's some kind of relief that comes with that. I think it's about that. It's just about getting curious and following that curiosity.
Michelle, this book has been likened to an Australian Emily Henry story. And I can't say that I disagree, but despite the lighter nature, I think you delve into some serious themes in this book. Amelia was stuck in so many ways, not just in this dead-end job, but I think living a life that was small, not living with an open heart and living in a way to protect herself so that she doesn't get hurt. So I wondered if you could talk to us a little bit about that and why this was something you wanted to spotlight in the novel.
And I was coming up with Amelia's character. It just made sense that if the plot was that she was going to go out and try all these things, well, if you're going to write about a character who's an adventure, you know, who's up for adventure all the time, there's not really much conflict there. So to have a character who has made her world small because of what things that have happened in her family, and she's starting to discover it's maybe not working out how she wants, then we've got a bit of conflict there. And when we meet Amelia in the beginning, she has anxiety and those kind of things. And I was able to draw on those things from my own experiences. You know, I've certainly had moments where I've woke up in the morning and you're just, even before you're fully awake, you feel filled with dread. And you can't even pinpoint what it is specifically. And it's just the most awful feeling. And it just feels debilitating in so many ways. And so I was able to kind of just draw, unfortunately, on those experiences that I've had. But that's important to me, that in order to make a character relatable, you draw on your own experiences. And then to be able to put it out in the world, then what for me, it's like saying to readers, you know, this is, you know, not all the, not everything that the character does is come from me, but you're kind of saying to the audience, I see you, and you know, I've been through this too, and you're not alone. And that's really important through all the books, that's what, through everything that I write, that's what I want people to know, is that they're seen and that they're heard. And that's what really makes characters relatable. You want people to be able to, for me, I want people to be able to see themselves within the characters. But yeah, it does deal with darker things for all the fun and lightness that there is. But the reason I kind of go there is because that's what the world is like. It's not just all sunshines and rainbows and that kind of thing. And so we have like the humour and the fun, but then we have like a darker side and the, you know, things that have happened within the plot, but we can't obviously give spoilers away. But that's just the way life goes. You know, when my dad, he was at the end of his life, he was in one room, the sickest that he'd ever been. My son was 10 months old and we'd all be waiting in the other room. But my son would do something that's funny or would make you smile. And you couldn't possibly think that you would smile when something so awful is happening in the next room to somebody you love with all your heart. But the reality is that there is this kind of overlap with light and dark in real life. As a writer, I don't think I could be someone who would just write about the dark all the time. I would just, because when I'm writing it, I'm in that character's head. I'm physically feeling what they're feeling in my body. I think as writers, you tend to do that in order to write about it. You're physically feeling it in your body. And that has an impact on you, because at the end of the day of writing, you know, these hard scenes, you can physically feel it in your body. You're completely drained. You've got nothing left to give. You're completely spent. But what I enjoy about writing the types of books that I do is that then I have these scenes which are funny, lighthearted. I want to make people laugh out loud. We're up for adventure. It's like, okay, we're going to be on, you know, my books are like, we're on a roller coaster ride. Are you ready? Are you signing up for it? Let's go. And then we have all the feels from it. But throughout all that, people to feel hope and joy and that anything is possible, really. So,
yeah, brilliant. Well, you've absolutely achieved that in spades, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
Suffice it to say that Amelia and her mother are not on great terms in this book, and their lives are worlds apart, and Amelia struggles with her mother's lifestyle. In fact, there's such a disconnect between them, which you've interrogated so sensitively in this book, and it's not until later that we understand why. And it's hard to talk about this without giving away spoilers.
But
I wondered if you could talk to me more about this disconnect and why it was important to this story.
Yeah, I think it's so strange, because I do write about this disconnect between mothers and daughters, and it's the same in terms of inheritance as well. There's this disconnect between the mothers and daughters. But I've got to say, the relationship between me and my mom is just completely opposite. We are just absolutely best friends. And even though she's in the UK, I speak to her every single day. So it is really strange that I kind of keep going to these strained relationships with the mother and daughter. But I just kind of like love going there. And I like the idea that, and it was the same with terms of inheritance as well, is that you can all be in the same house and you can all be going through life over like 10, 20 years of living together. And you think you're experiencing the same kind of things, but you're not. You know, you're both seeing things from a different perspective. I think it's quite common where, well, for example, with siblings, and I used to say this in about terms of inheritance as well, is that, you know, years later, you come back and you'll be talking about something that happened and you'll be like, well, to your brother or to your mom, well, no, that's not what happened. And they'll be going, yeah, it is. And it's like, no, it's not. And we just had this conversation. My mom phoned me up and my brother, and they were asking me this question. Did I have my hair permed when I was little, when I was younger? And I said, no, I just used to, you know, like diffuse it or whatever. But my brother was adamant that I'd had a perm and I didn't have a perm. But it was just all how you grow up with either different memories of things, and how you know, that can just cause conflict as well. But these memories that you have and these perceptions that you have as you're growing up, they really shape who you are. And it's amazing how differently, like in terms of inheritance, you've got four sisters, how they all come out so differently because of their own experiences. And yet they're all in the same house at the same time over a period of years. I mean, obviously different ages. So So I think that's really interesting to kind of get into that. And then as an author, then you kind of go back in and you start peeling away all these layers and you see these fractured relationships. And then as the book goes on, you kind of go, oh, that's why they think that. Oh, that's why they think that. And it's really interesting. And as readers, we want to walk in other people's shoes. That's the whole, you know, that's the whole point. But it doesn't mean that we have to experience a story that could be set on the other side of the world or in a, you know, a different realm or, you know, some fantasy. We can open our minds to just the people who are in our immediate family and just say, oh, well, maybe they're seeing that from something, you know, in a different way to what my experience was. You know, those experiences can be so close to home and it doesn't have to be. And I think that's why we read, is to kind of broaden the way other people see the world. And yeah, so that's really important. But I do enjoy kind of going in and kind of like, you know, kind of putting all this conflict in there and then kind of figuring out why.
Michelle, there were so many jobs that Amelia tried out in the aftermath of quitting her job and trying to find where her passions lay, as you were talking about before. So I wanted to know, was there any particular research that you had to do to bring Amelia's experiences in each of these jobs to the page? I mean, the zookeeper experience was amazing. And yes, I've always thought I'd make a decent wedding planner.
Yes. Well, like I said before, like I used to work for an event stylist company. And so we would go in and we would set up all the ceremonies, like say at the lighthouse, we would go and set it up, set the aisle, all the seating up and all the decorations, that kind of thing. And then we would go to where the venue where the wedding reception is, and we would just transform this, like, you know, bland room into just something magical. And so you got to see a lot of the behind the scenes of like what goes into a wedding and all that kind of thing. So that was a lot of fun. And we also, the company did flowers as well. And although that's not something that I did, there was someone who worked there that was her kind of speciality. And so occasionally, you know, I might have to help out with that and do something a bit more hands-on. And so I was able to pick up, like, you know, the floristry and the wedding planning from there. And then, like I said, I used to be a teacher and a teacher aide. So writing those scenes, and there's like this great kid called Max I was just able to draw on those experiences and kind of show the reality of what it's like working with little kids, you know, how honest they are. And that was really good fun. But also alongside, you know, the jobs that she's trying out, there's this kind of like big, you know, romance story that's going alongside it at the same time. And within that relationship, Amelia's kind of facing her fears. And so, you know, she's got like a fear of heights and things like that. So, you know, I can't say some of the stuff I did, but I did research when you start reading the book. I did do these things. So that was great fun. I was really able to write about those experiences. And, you know, when there's a jet ski at some point and all that kind of stuff, and kind of like, yeah, I've put myself out there. And there's a point where a jet ski goes over to Peel Island, which is like in the Redlands where we are, and I've never been over there before, and I just needed to find out some information about it. I need to know how long it takes to get over there, and this island you can only get to by jet ski or like by boat kind of thing. So I went down to Raby Bay Foreshore Park, and there was lots of jet skis around. I was like, okay, Michelle, build up the courage. You know, we're talking about stepping out of your comfort zone here, but I have to do it as an author as well. So I could see these couples and they were getting off the jet skis, and I was like, oh no, I don't know. Oh, I'm too afraid to ask them. So we'll go down to the next little beach. And finally I plucked up the courage and this couple got off a jet ski, and I was like, oh, you know, I'm just writing a book, like as you do. So I said, oh, you know, my character needs to go on a jet ski over there or whatever, how long it takes and all this. And they said, oh, we'll just take you over. So a week and a half later, I was on this jet ski going at 80 kilometres an hour over to Peel Island. And so I was able to do all this research and get all these like first-hand experience that I just would never have had, you know, by reading about it. And it was so much fun, but I just almost felt like Amelia herself, putting myself into these situations. And they were just the most wonderful couple and just so lovely. I was kind of almost living it with her as she was doing all these things. So the research was a lot of fun, and then drawing on experiences that I've had as well.
Okay, Michelle. So I was thinking about this earlier. Two books in 2 years, an impressive achievement by any standards. What does the average day in the life of Michelle Upton, author, look like, and how do you maintain your productivity?
Well, it depends at what point in the year you ask me. So obviously when I was writing Terms of Inheritance, it was kind of done at my own pace. Like I've said this little story before, but it's like, okay, if I get a few hundred words written down or if I don't get anything written down. And this is when the different parts to the writing experience. So you have these months where you're writing the first draft, and that is different from editing, I feel. So when we're talking about how many words a day and that kind of thing, it's for however many months it takes to do that. And then it takes on it looks completely different then. So for Terms of Inheritance, it was like, okay, write so many words, and then that's great if I do that. And then at, 2 o'clock, I need to go and fill the car with petrol. And then, I need to pop to Woolies before I pick up the kids, whatever. But then when I wrote Emergency Exit Only, I had a deadline. okay, I need to hit this many words. I knew how long I had to do it. I knew when I wanted to finish the first draft by, in order to give me enough time afterwards to go back, edit it, reflect on it, all that kind of thing. So it started off 1,000 words a day, and then I realized, it needed to be 1,700 words a day. So it was a case of, and this was over like Christmas, so the kids weren't at school, so it was a bit easier, but it was a case of getting up at 5:30, I'm sitting down to write, and I did not leave the house until though I've hit that word count. And it's like, we need to go to, the car needs petrol, and I need to go to Woolies. That's fine. The cereal in the cupboard, and we've got another 20K in the car. We'll get to the shops and back. We don't need to worry about it. And so you have like this completely whole different mentality, because it's like HarperCollins are waiting for this, and it's got to be good, Yeah. Whereas the first time round, no one's particularly waiting for it, and you hope someone will like it further on. So it's completely different. And then you go into the rounds of editing, so then you send that off, and then you might have like 4 weeks where you can just decompress, and then you'll get your structural edits back, and then you have say 2 or 3 months to kind of get the structural edits done, and then you hand it back, and then you have like another 3 or 4 weeks. And so you kind of aren't this on and off kind of thing. But it was interesting this time with Emergency Exit Only, when I was so into the book, I found it really difficult to be reading other books. And normally I'm reading all the time. It was more to do with, nothing to do with some authors talk about copying voices and stuff like that. They want their own voice in their head. It's more a case of you're just so mentally spent by the end of it. When I was going on walks and stuff like that, I just had to have nothing in my head for that time, because you just feel so physically drained after. And I'm trying to get that. I think the more you do it, the more you try and find a balance between, because it's so intense and you want to produce the best work that you possibly can. And so you don't give yourself weekends and you don't have days off, because you just keep going until the job's done, really. So I'm trying to find that balance of what's healthy and what's, what works, and also without neglecting my family totally and that kind of thing. And that's a balance in that, because it's all new and you don't know how it works. You just do the best you can with what you've got. So it's all very experimental. You might want an answer that's a bit more like, oh yeah, I've got it all sorted out, this is what it looks like, but it's really just a day-by-day survival thing sometimes.
Well, I actually think there's a lot of value in hearing things like that, Michelle. Yes. Because I think, as you know, there are a lot of writers that listen to this podcast, and everyone's trying to figure out their own way forward and how things are going to work for them. And sometimes it just really helps to understand how other people find their way or settle on their routine after having experimented with a different way to do things, or what works for them. And so sometimes it's just really useful to understand how people do things.
On those days when I'm not doing edits or I'm not doing, I just really try and find, okay, so I'm just going to watch Netflix, and I'm just going to go for walks, and I'm just going to, it's a case of trying to be in the moment, because when you're in your book, you're in your book all the time, and that's what you're thinking about always. So when you're not doing that, it really is important just to let it all go. And then, things that you want to add to edits later or whatever will come to you, just make a note of that or whatever. But just allowing that faith in your head. Because also, once terms of inheritance came out, it's not, and I was writing emergency exit only, but you're not just writing emergency exit only, because then you're out promoting, speaking on podcasts, going to libraries and doing book talks. And it's trying to find what works, how you deal with that as well, because yeah. I find I get nervous beforehand, and that's because I care about it so much. I want it to go well, and I do a lot of preparation for that. And you know, you're listening to all the podcasts beforehand, and you know, you want to do the best that you can. And then I have an absolute blast while I'm doing it, like now. But then, and then afterwards, because your adrenaline's going, you kind of crash a bit after. And it's the same when you go and do social interactions and that, and I absolutely love it. But it's like listening to your body, because these are new experiences that I've never experienced before. So you're kind of like, oh, well, how does that work when I'm writing a novel? Or, oh, okay, I need to make sure that I don't put anything in for the next day because I know I'm just spent or whatever. And so you're just learning as you go. But it's just been an amazing experience. I mean, wow, how lucky am I to get this opportunity, not just for one book, for a second book. Yeah, I've got all the events coming up this week now for emergency exit only. But I've got to say, I'm having a little break now from writing. And so, you know, with Christmas and the new year coming up, and I'm just going to be in the moment and watch Netflix and go for walks. And I've got a new puppy dog, and I'm just going to be with them and lots of loving. And I've got these events coming up, and I'm just going to enjoy it, because it really is an amazing experience and an amazing gift, and I feel extremely lucky. So, and you have to make sure you enjoy it, because you've worked so hard for it. So it really is important to stop and go, oh wow, you know, this thing that I was working on for 10 months and I was like, oh, can I do it, and then you go, oh yes, you can do it. And then to find people who are enjoying it, oh, it just feels amazing. So you have to really enjoy it and make the most of it, for sure.
I love that, Michelle. What a terrific attitude that you have. And I'm very glad to hear that you're going to be taking a break and enjoying the time that you have with your family over the next little while and refill your cup. That is just beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so important for creativity as well, is to just refill that creativity cup, for sure, and just kind of sit in the moment. It's important to have that play and to get curious about things and to let your mind wander, you know, because when you're writing a book, it's all, you know, I'm very much a plotter, so I have everything plotted out. But then I just need that space in my head, because you feel like, I think when you're writing a book, it feels like you're trying to hold the whole book in your head at once. Yeah. So it can feel a lot. And that's why I plot it out, because then I can see it and it's like, I know it's there and it's safe on the board. So we're going to be okay. And then when I'm not doing that, I just want my mind emptied so I can just let all this stuff come in. And just, you know, when you're sitting at a coffee shop and you can just relax and just take in the environment around you, because that's so important when it comes to writing your next book and your next piece of work. And that's what writing is. You're constantly observing, and you have to be in the present moment for that. So it's just about allowing time and space for that.
It's so true. Now, I was going to ask you about tips for writers, but I think you've given us so much to reflect on, so much. It's so much of your experience with us already that I think that there's plenty in there. If listeners were listening properly, I think you would have already found plenty of tips in there. But Michelle, what I wanted to know was, if listeners wanted to learn more about you and your books, how can they find you?
Yeah, so michelleupton.com, if they go there, and everything is on there. But I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. You can easily find me on there, and all the links are there, and to the HarperCollins and where you can buy the books and all that kind of thing.
Oh, that is wonderful. Michelle, it has been so brilliant to watch your star rise with these two fantastic books. I wish you every success with them, my friend. May they fly off the shelves. They're highly recommended reading, perfect for the upcoming holidays. I'm so very delighted that we could chat today. Thank you for joining me on Talking Aussie Books.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Claudine. And I'm so glad that we get to finally have a conversation after seeing you on socials for so many years. And yeah, we get to come together in this way. So thank you for having me. Thank you.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading.